Okay, let's begin Perek Yud v'Chol Zos. This Perek really is a continuation of Perek Tes. And Nehemiah is saying that despite the fact that we suffer, even though we build the Beis HaMikdash, we have Karbanos, we have wolves, we have Kohanim, Levim, the Yisrael B'Mamodam. Seemingly, yeah. Yeah, Nehemiah, it appears to be the speaker. His exact words could have been taken from the Nevi'im, could have been taken from other people, but it appears that he's the one delivering this drasha. And he acknowledges in the last couple of episodes we learned yesterday, he acknowledges that we suffer greatly. Although we have a Beis HaMikdash, we have Kohanim, Levim, and Yisrael, and the Mamadam, and the city has a wall, and people are beginning to live and move into Eretz Yisrael. But Eretz Yisrael is subject to the will, to the control, it's under the control of the foreign power of the Persian government, and all the best that the country produces and has to offer is taken away by the Persian government, and we pay taxes. Just to review the last two, the last pasuk lamed zayin, utvuasa marba lamalachim, and the produce that the land produces is given to the foreign kings. Asher nesato leinu bechatoseinu, the al giviyoseinu moshlem, and they rule over our bodies. We're basically slaves. We find ourselves in great distress. Now we begin Perigud, and despite all of this, Anachnu Karsim Amono, we are going to forge a covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The people here are going to pledge their loyalty to Hashem. And they're not pledging their loyalty to Hashem. They're anyway mechuyev. Just the fact that they go mekabel the Torah on Har Sinai automatically requires them to be faithful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But they're going the extra step. They're doing something a little bit extra to show that they are sincere in willing to accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvos. We're going to, let's give a little background. We're going to list at towards the end of the parak a whole a collection of mitzvos which the Jewish people are accepting upon themselves to do. Now there's a discussion in the Mefarshim. If you read the Pesukim at face value, they appear to be mitzvos min ha-Torah. So what are they doing that they are not already obligated to do? We have a rule that if a person makes a shavua, that he'll do a mitzvah, he's chayiv for a shavua shav. Because we already mushba v'oymed at Har Sinai. At Har Sinai, the entire Klal Yisrael swore, took a shavua, that they will observe all of the mitzvos of the Torah. So if you now, today, in today's times, would make another shavua, I swear that I will observe Hashem's mitzvos, this is a shavua in vain. You've taken Hashem's name in vain, because you can't make a shavua on top of something which you are already obligated to do by the power of a shavua. So what's the purpose of doing this? So one answer is in Echnami. There is no real purpose. There is no real purpose in taking this oath that they're going to do. It's just a symbolic form of recognition that we have an obligation going back from the time of Matan Torah to observe Hashem's mitzvahs. However, many other Mefarshim, they look at this parsha, this parak, a little differently. They read every mitzvah not as a reference to the mitzvah d'oraisa, but as this is the introduction to the mitzvos d'rabbanan. Every mitzvah we do, we know there's a deraisa, and Chazal over the generations have added safeguards to the mitzvah by not allowing us to do mitzvah dinim which are derabbanan, which are only rabbinic enactments. For example, on Shabbos, are you allowed to engage in business on Shabbos? Shabbos, there are 36 melachas. Are you allowed to touch muksa on Shabbos? Move muksa. The answer is absolutely on a deraisa level, and that's absolutely yes. You can go to the store, you can go to the market, and you can tell and you can select what merchandise you want to buy, and you can tell the vendors, ship it to my home and charge my credit card. I'm not giving you the have it on file, or there's an arrangement where you do not actually do anything which is awesome in HaTorah, but you are engaging in activities which are not in the spirit of Shabbos. So here when it says in these psukim that they will makabel upon themselves Shabbos, well, the Nekach HaMemkar is explicit. We're dealing with dinim which are purely derabbanan. So let's talk about Shemitah. We're going to see here there's a halacha that on Shemitah you're not allowed to work the land. Now that is a mitzvah of deraisa. So many Mefarshim tell us that what it means here, that since at this point in time the majority of Klal Yisrael were not living in Eretz Yisrael, min ha-Torah, there is no mitzvah of Shemitah. The seventh year, according to many opinions, you're allowed to work the land. There's no prohibition because since the majority of Klal Yisrael are not living on the land, min ha-Torah, there is no din of Shemitah. Or there's no... And... So when it says here that they accept upon themselves laws of Shemitah, it means rabbinic halachas, that even though min ha-Torah we are allowed to work the land, mid-rabbanan, we're not going to work the land. So that is what they're doing here. Everything that we're going to see in the parak, all the mitzvot that are, we're going to interpret them as extensions of dinim deraisa, rabbinic enactments, they're putting all of this in the document, and the leaders of the people are signing the document. So that's what it's saying, that we're going to have here a list of 83 leaders who are going to actually sign the document. I think there's a question if it's really 83 or 84. There's different ways to count one of the names. Maybe we'll come across it. It's either 83 or 84 people are signing this document. These are the leaders of the Jewish people. They're going to be divided into the Kohanim, the Levim, and the princes, and we'll see all that right now. So here, Nehemiah says, despite the fact that we suffer and things are not so good by us, we're still willing to accept upon us. We recognize that we have an obligation to observe Hashem's Torah, and we're putting it in writing, and we're going to take another Shavua, and we're going to take upon ourselves a curse that if we do not fulfill Hashem's Torah and all of these enactments, then we shall suffer. We are going to forge a covenant. Amona means faith. It's another word for a bris, a covenant. And we're going to put this covenant in writing, period. The al hechosum, and who will sign, who will be upon the signatures of this document, this covenant which we accept upon ourselves with writing, Sorenu, our princes, Levienu, our Levim, and Kohanenu, our prophet, our Kohanim, priests. And now the Pasuk Beis begins to enumerate some of the names. Let's just run through some names and we'll come back and we'll discuss some of the issues. V'al ha-chasumim, who is going to sign? Who were among those that actually signed? So we go here, if we have first the leaders, Nehemiah Hatir Shasa, that's one name. That refers to Nehemiah, who's called the Shasa ben Hakalia. His father's name was Hakalia, and Vitzidkiah, that's two. Number three is Sirayah, Azariah, and Yirmiah. This is not the Yirmiah from Sefer Yirmiah, because it's not Shaykh, but he was alive at this point in time. It was 95 years since the Churban. Yirmiah lived at the time of the Churban. He died not much after the Churban. We don't know, not 95 years later, so this is a different Yirmiah. And then we have Pashur, Amariah, and also it says that he was a Kohen. Yirmiah, I'm not sure if he was a Kohen, but we have Pashur, Amariah, and Malkiah, Chatush, Shivaniah, Maluch, Chorim, Meremos, Ovadia, Daniel, Ginsoin, Baruch, Meshulam, Aviah, and Miyamin, Ma'aziah, Vilgai, Shemaiah, Ela, HaKoyhanim. I think there are a total of 13, if I'm not mistaken, there are 13 Koyhanim that signed as Koyhanim on this stack. Let's read a few more Pesukim, V'Halevim. Who are the Levim that signed? V'Yeshua. Levav, some learn is part of the name, some learn it's not part of the name. Ben Azania, that's the entire name. Binui, period. And from Bibnei Cha Nodod was Kadmiel. From the children of Che Nodod was this person called Kadmiel. He signed on behalf of that family. Va'achehem, who else from the Levim? Shivanya, Hodia, Kelita, Piloya, and Chonon, Michor, Ruchov, Chashavya, Zakur, Sherevia and Shivanya, Hodia, Boni, and Beninu. These were the Levim. Now, before we go further and test it, let's see some of the Rashi, the Metzudas, and some interesting Midrashim. Rashi Pasuk Aleph says, Uvechol Zos, Uvechol Horo Hazos. I'm reading from the Rashi Pasuk Aleph. Uvechol Horo Hazos Haba Aleinu, Anachnu Korsim Amonu LaKadosh Baruch Hu. Despite the fact that we suffer, we are still forging a covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lahamin, Velivtechbo, to express our faith and to put our trust in Him. We're not just giving over oral testimony. We want to put this in writing so it shall serve as a record for all future generations that we accept upon ourselves with a shvua and with a curse that we will fulfill Hashem's mitzvahs. Again, but the more important idea is that this point in time is a major moment in the history. It is the beginning of the dinim derabbanan. Until this point in time, there were very few rabbinic enactments, if any. And even the rabbinic enactments that did exist, like for example, the classic example of Heter Shasa, that they allowed Nehemiah to drink wine from the Persian government, which means that Yai Nesech was also at this point in time. And Yai Nesech is a wine that has been touched by a guy that has not been poured out for Avodah Zarah, was only forbidden rabbinically. Until this point in time, it was only a custom. It was not a rabbinic law. It was lightweight. There were a handful number of rabbinic enactments, if at all. And even those rabbinic enactments did not have the severity of a real law that is prohibited. It was just a custom. You're not allowed to drink wine that was touched by a guy, wine that's not been cooked. So why not? It's lightweight, a custom. And if it's a custom, you can find many reasons why you can be lenient. Once it becomes a rabbinic enactment, it's a halacha midrabbanan, it's part of Shulchan Aruch, under no condition can you find an exception. The only exceptions will be those exceptions which were built in, literally, into the enactment. But if it's not built in exception, you're not allowed to violate the halacha. So that is what is happening now for the very first time. The Rabbanan are beginning to set up an entire system of rabbinic enactments, and the entire Klal Yisrael, through their leaders, are accepting upon themselves to treat the mitzvos, the rabbanon, with the same severity almost as the mitzvos, the araisos. That's exactly what's happening, and they're signing. And this signing is being done as on a document as a testimony for all generations. Base v'yal hachasumim ato now moine v'hoylich hachasumim sefer leedus leedus kibul hamitzvos. We now begin to enumerate the 84 people that are actually going to sign this document. Who are the kohanim? We have a list of kohanim which includes Nehemiah hatarshasa. So Rashi, I think it's the third time Rashi tells us this in the sefer. Shemech who the hatarshasa is one name. It's part of Nehemiah's name, v'zeh shepirashti in Ezra, da'at harshasa hu Nehemiah, v'lo menikosh ma'at harshasa, sheityu lo chacham, it's a composite of two words, heter shasa. The Rabbanon allowed him to sip from the king's wine, to prove to the king that the wine has not been poisoned. Lishtos yayi nesach lefi shohoye mashke lemech, because he was the sarmashkim, he was the butler. Okay, next, Rashi, okay, there is no more Rashi until late, much later on. Let's see, we have the Mitzudos Pasuk Aleph, V'chol Zos, Musav L'mala, so right away the Mitzudos tells us that this Pasuk Yud is really connected to the previous parak. We know that the chapter breaks in Sefer Ult Tanakh has not been done by Jews. It was done by non-Jewish Christian printers. They broke up the parakim, and here the parak is broken up really right smack in the middle of a chapter of a theme. With the chol zot, it's a continuation. Musav lamadla. The mitzvah makes it clear it's going back to the previous parak. Parak tesh. Amar hinei avosenu hoyu b'malchus b'malchus uvitoyva v'im kol zeloy avaducha. Our forefathers, they were part of the government, and they didn't serve you. So he's coming to contrast us, the people of this generation, to their predecessors. Their predecessors had a good life. The government did not torture them. They were able to do whatever they wanted. When they lived in Eretz Yisrael during the time of the Bayis Rishon, they were able to do whatever they wanted, even though they were under some foreign control. The goyim already were beginning to exercise their sovereignty, their power over the land. Yet they had still full autonomy, and they did not serve you, Hashem. They rebelled against you. We, on the other hand, we suffer. We do not have autonomy. We are under the control of the Persian government, yet we're not like our forefathers. We serve you, Hashem, despite our hardships. Musav l'malach, shama hinei avaseinu hayu b'malchus v'toyva, they were b'malchus, they had their own kingdom, and they had good. V'im kol zeh loy avaducha, they did not serve you, they rebelled against you. V'anachnu haloy avodim, uv'tzor gedola, we are slaves to a foreign nation, and we find ourselves in a great, great distress. Uv'chol zos, anachnu karsim bris amona, we are now going to establish a covenant. U'mikuyemes la'avoy, u'mikuyo la'avodecha, and we are faithful to serve you. The choisim oisa b'sefer l'man yelizikon. We're putting it in writing that it should be a document for all generations, a record of what we have done. V'al hechasum. And now he begins to enumerate those that will sign. Ad gemar divrei hasefer. On the end, after the text has been written on the gemar. Yechosmu sarenu b'chasimas yodam. Lois ulraya shekiblu alatzman kol hakosu b'sefer. So the al hakosu means on the bottom, on the seal. After the text has been written, our leaders will write to indicate that they have accepted upon themselves. They who are our representatives, we accept upon ourselves what it says. Now we have a no long list. Nehemiah. So we've already gone to the Levim and the Kohanim. Lufisha kasu b'sefer kol adrama asher nishbu aleihem hamum lamata. Amar hachasum b'loshen rabim. V'ratzlema hagomur hagomur shel kol adrama b'loshen rabim is. The following who have signed, including all these 84 people, Eile Hakara Pasik Tes, Eile Hachasum Hoyumina Kayhan. The following, the first list is Kayhanim, Pasig Yud, the Yeshua, Kain Shmo Bivav. It's a very unusual name, a Vav. If you read the Pasik simply, you would say the Vav is a Chibur. No, the Vav is part of his name. When he got married in the Ksuba, they put the Vav there, because that was, at least how the Metzudas learns, the Halavim, the Yeshua. Because if you would be writing this Pasuk, since Yeshua is the first person, you would not add the Vav. The Vav is only when the person is number 2, 3, 4, and so on. But if it's the first one in the list, it's not grammatically correct to put a Vav. So why is the Vav there? So the Metzudas of the opinion that was part of his actual name. Other Mefarshim disagree, and they tell us that the style of writing in Ksuv, sometimes you have an extra vav, even when it's the beginning of the pasuk, because it's not the way we write English. You only write "and" when you're number two, not after the first word. But that's a style of writing in Sefer Ksuvim. Period. Rosh Sheikh Pasuk Rosh. Now there are a few important midrashim. First is a fascinating Tanchuma. Tanchuma says that. What it says here, the al hechosum alludes to a miracle. They put the document in the Beis Hamikdash, they lied it down on the floor, and they woke up in the morning, and miraculously Hashem Kaviyachol signed the document to indicate his pleasure with what they have done. Now, what did Hashem sign? So there's a discussion. Either Hashem signed one of his multiple names. We know that there's a Shem Yud Kivavke, there's a Shem Adnos, there's a Shem Kel, there's a Shem Elokim, there's a Shem of the 72 letters, 23 letters. There are many Shemos, all familiar with the article Siddur. We have in different parts of the Nusach, of the Yamim Noiram, in the brackets. It shows you all these different names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kav Yochum, miraculously, in the middle of the night, in the Beis Hamikdash, Hashem's name appeared, signed on the document. Other commentators explain that Hashem signed Emes. Emes is the Chosama Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a Chazal. It's Emes. That the word Emes appeared on the document, indicating HaKadosh Baruch Hu has pleasure. He also wants to enter into this bris with Klal Yisrael, that they should accept upon themselves all of the takanos, all of the dinim derabanan, with a curse and with a shvua. That's one interesting idea. Now there's another idea from the Malbim. The Malbim asks a question, why here in this pasuk does it say the first ones to sign were the Sarenu, the Levienu, and the Kohanenu? When we'll get down to the end of all the people at the end of this long list, it's going to say there that the who is going to review. We have a long list of names. And who signed? It was signed by the Kohanim, the Levim, and the Yisraelim. So why is the order reversed? When we come to the end, the very end of Pasuk Chaf Tes. You go, jump down to Pasuk Chaf Tes, it says, who signed? It says, Usha'or Ha'am HaKoyhanim HaLeviyim HaShayarim HaMesharim HaNesinim V'chol HaNivdol Miyam Yaretz. It says here, they were machzikim me'alachem adireim rubam ba'olu v'shul aleches peres halakim. So it says here later on, towards the end, that the order was first the Kohanim, then the Levim, and then the Yisraelim. So why here in the introduction is it the other way around? First the Sarim, the princes, then the Levim, and then the Kohanim. So the Malbim says that there were two documents. There was like a carbon copy. There was a duplicate. Just like today, they don't do it anymore. It used to be, and they even only a few months in the banks. You know, you have a carbon copy. They even stopped that. Now it's totally computerized. But you write a document, and you take the carbon copy for yourself. That's exactly what they did when they had a document. There were two in ancient times. The custom was to have two documents. One was put away for safekeeping, hidden away in a vault, some type of a very secure location, and there was another carbon copy of the document on display for the Hamoinam, where people, if you want to see exactly what it says, you'll have access to read what it says. So this is referring to the carbon copy, because the custom was, the carbon copy was rolled in the opposite direction. The real copy, make believe we have one page. So the real copy, which is put away in a vault, was rolled up like this. From the back, here's the beginning of the document, here's the end of the document. So it was rolled up, going back like you have a Megillah, right? A Megillah Sester. You roll it very carefully from the back, going to the front. So when you open it up, the first thing you see is Vayihi Bimei Achashverosh, and everything is covered very carefully. The parchment, the text is inside. But the custom, according to the Malbim, the carbon copy, was the opposite. You started from the front, so make believe this was the front, and you rolled it backwards. That was just the custom, the convention of the time. You rolled it backwards, and that means that the script was on the outside. And what did you see first? You saw the bottom of the document. So when you look at the document, what was the first thing you would see on the outside? The last one to sign. So when they actually signed, who signed first? First came the Kohanim. Then came the Levim. Then came the son. That's will be the proper way to sign. The Kohanim, they are the most chashuv. Then come the Levim. Then come the Yisraelim. But the way the document, the carbon copy, the duplicate was preserved was by rolling it from the beginning towards the end and rolling it with the script, with the text on the outside. So when someone hand you the document, what would be the first thing that you would see? You would see the one who signed last. And then as you would open it, you would see the one who signed second to last. And as you open it a little bit more, you would see the one who signed third to last. And then you would see the end of the document. And the reason why it was folded in this method, it was rolled up this method, was to make it clear that this is only a duplicate. This is not the real thing. See, today, you have a carbon copy. Everyone knows you have a carbon copy. You look at it, it's yellow, and you see that the writing is not clear. It's obvious. But in ancient times, they didn't have these high-tech these techniques. This technology, they were scribes that had to go through the effort of actually writing another copy of the document. So what differentiates the real thing, the real document, from the duplicate? The way they would make it noticeable to anyone, make it obviously noticeable, is with this convention that if it's the real document, it's rolled from end to beginning with the text inside, the same way we roll up a Megillas Esther. But the duplicate copy, which is not put away for, just for, not preserved for safekeeping in a vault, but is circulated among the masses to remind them what it is, to make it clear that this duplicate, it was rolled in the opposite direction with the script on the outside. So everyone knows that this is a duplicate. So that's what it says over here. Over here we are referring to the Malm. So the Malm says, Uvchol kursim abial hechosum. On the chosum means on the one. He interprets this to mean on the duplicate copy. The duplicate copy, the first thing you will notice was the Sorenu, the Levienu, and the Choyhanenu. Okay. Let's now go to the next, let's run to the other names. The other names, now we come to the Rosh Hashanah. So we finish with the Kohanim and the Levim, and now we come to the Rosh Pasuk Tes Vav. The Rosh Hashanah, who were the Rosh, the leaders of the Yisraelim? They were Parosh Pachas Moav. Parosh was the governor of Moav. Many we learned, we had this already twice in the list, that David HaMelech, he conquered Moav and he appointed a governor to keep them in check, make sure they don't make trouble, and make sure they pay tribute to Yisrael. So he appointed his family, and some of the family were his descendants, or they were his nephew Yoav, and therefore this was a descendant either of David or a descendant of Yoav, his nephew, and his name was Parosh. He was from the family of the Pachas, of the governors of Moav, Elam and Zatu and Bani, three more people. We have Buni, Azgod, and Bevoi, Adoniah, Vigvai, and Odin, Oter, Chizkiah, Azur, Hodiah, Choshum, Beitzoi, Chorif, Anosos, and Nevoi, Mag, Piosh, Mishulam, Chizir, Mishay, Zav, El, Tzadok, Yahadua, Pelat, Yochonon, Anoyah, Hoshech, Ananya, Chashuv, Halechesh. That's a very interesting name. Halechesh means to whisper. His name was with a hey, Halechesh, with a hey, Pilcha, and Shevek, Ruchum, Chashavia, Maaseya, Vaachia, Chonon, Anon, Malu, Chorim, Bano. Fine. So this concludes the list of 84 people who signed this document. All 84 people, it appears, were part of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah was comprised of 120 Zikanim, and many of them were Nevi'im. Farshim tell us that these 84 people were part of that select group of the 120 Zikanim. What about the rest? Why they did not sign, I do not know. It's not clear why not every single one, but we have a right to assume that some of these people here indeed were Nevi'im. They were Kohanim, Levi'im, Yisraelim. They were the prophets who signed. Okay, now we come to Pasuk Chaf Tes, Ushor Ha'om, HaKohanim, Alim HaSharim, and from the remainder of the people, who include the Kohanim, the Levi'im. Now the Levi'im over here in this Pasuk, we're coming to define there were different types of Levi'im. The Levi'im were broken down different categories. There were the Hashayarim, there were the gatekeepers, and there were the Hamishoyarim, the singers, and then there were Hanesinim. These were not Levi'im. These were people that were from the nation of the Givonim, who Moshe, Yoshua, and David appointed as the water carriers and the wood choppers. They were Nosun. They were assigned. Nesin, Lashon of Nosun, they were assigned tasks for the Beis HaMikdash. V'chol HaNivdol Me'amei HaRotzos. This refers to Gerim. We have Nesinim and Gerim. El Teras Elokim, they removed themselves from the customs of the nations of the world to the Teras Elokim. Nishehem, including their wives, Bineihem, their children, Uvinosehem. Kol Yodea Mevin, all people who understood were understanding. What about all of these people? What about this Pasuk of Tes leads in the Pasuk Lamed? What do they do? Machazikim esachayim adirehem. They strengthened their brethren who were mighty. And uvoim, and they entered be'Allah in a curse. It wasn't just that they took a shavua. In ancient times, a shavua was accompanied by a curse. Today, we don't think you go to court, a person goes to court, they make you swear, and before you testify, do you swear to say the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth? Or whatever nusach they have, you have to swear. Or if you take public office, you have to swear to uphold the laws. Every public servant has to take a shavua when you're sworn in. There's no curse. When a person becomes a civil servant, you swear. You put your hand on the Bible, or whatever. But in ancient times, it was much more than that. It was, I swear, and I accept upon myself to be cursed. Can you imagine such a thing? If I'm saying a lie. Today, unfortunately, many people don't take the shua very seriously. We all know from the media, all different stories, people, they swear perjury, they swear, and they say things which are not 100% true. Can you imagine today if the courts would require people to say part of their shua, and if I'm a liar, then I accept upon myself a curse. I'm sure there'll be people that don't, doesn't make a difference, that doesn't, the word is nothing, but very likely there are many people that this would already change their attitude and how far they're willing to go to lie and make a false shua. But that's what it says. They came bomba Allah, they entered into a curse, and the curse in fact comes first before the shua. Uvishua laleches, to follow b'sayras ho'elokim asher nidam b'yad Moshe eved ho'elokim, that was given to Moshe, the servant of Elokim, the lishmar v'lasos, to guard and to do as called mitzvos Hashem Adoneinu, Hashem our master, u'mishpatov v'chukov, his laws and his statutes. Now, there are many things over here that have to be mentioned in this passage. First pasuk, which is very critical, which is pasuk, but unfortunately is not always appreciated, is who signed this document? 84 people. And who did not sign? The rest of Klal Yisrael. But the rest of Klal Yisrael were described here in pasuk lamed as machazikim alachehim adirehem. They supported their brethren who were their superiors. Adir means a leader, the mighty ones. In other words, a leader can only be successful if his people want him to be successful. If you have a shul where all the balabatim are out to get the rav, they're all out to get him, the rav cannot be successful, he cannot succeed. You can only be successful in a place where the people want you to succeed. If they don't want you to succeed, you're not going to be successful. I once, someone's told me about a story where a person, he had an opportunity to be a semi-rabbi. I don't know if it was really, it was a leadership position. It was part religious, part administrative. And he was in a certain position, and he could have taken the position. If he really wanted the position, he could have manipulated the situation in his favor, that he would have received the position and get a very, very nice check. It was a very, very good job. A lot of money was involved. And he turned down the job. And they interviewed him, why did you turn down the job? And he said, because I can't be successful in a place where the people don't want me to succeed. I know I can take the job. I know I can manipulate, because the people who appoint me and so on and so forth, I can work it out that I'll get the job. But being the job, I have to represent these people. And the masses, the people that I'm going to represent, do not like me. They don't like me. I'm not their type of person. We don't get along. We have a very bad history. And I cannot succeed in this job if the people don't want me to succeed. And many people, I think, in his situation would not be able to be in that Nisayan. It's a job. There's a lot of money involved. There's probably a lot of covet also involved. But he knows it's not a good situation. And it's so true. And here it's explicit in the pasuk. 84 people signed the document. These were the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. These were the Rabbanim. These were the Gedolim, the leaders. What about the masses? There were at least 42,360. What about them? Did they go for this? Or did they go for this Amana, this Bris? So this is a very important pasuk. You know why this was successful? Because the Sha'or Ha'om, the Kohanim, the Levim, including the She'arim, and including the Mesherim, and the Mesinim, and the Gerim, and their wives, and their children, their sons, and their daughters, they all were all for it. They all had faith in their leaders. They wanted their leaders to succeed. Machazikim al acheihem adirehem. Three very innocent, four innocent words. But these words carry, they make all the difference. They make all the difference between a successful leader and a non-successful leader. It's a very, very powerful pasuk. Okay, now it says something also very interesting. Biad Moshe Eved Hu Elokim. How is Moshe described? I don't have an answer. You have to tell me a good answer to this question. Moshe is described as the Eved Hu Elokim. When Moshe Rabbeinu died, was there a funeral?
No.
He was, well, I can't say not. HaKadosh Baruch Hu
told him to go.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him go to Har Nevo, and Vayomosha Moshe and Hashem buried him. Were there any hespedim? Did Moshe Rabbeinu get the covered acharon by his soul? The answer that once in a very nice drasha, that yes, there was a hespit. Who's Maspit? Who's the hespit? The Ribbono Shel Olam. What was the hespit? Two words. Moshe Eved Hashem. Eved Yud Kevav, Vayoma Sham Moshe, Eved Hashem. The Hespid, two words. No long Hespedim, didn't take 5 hours. Two words. Eved Hashem. Yud Kevavke. Yud Kevavke is, we all know, Midas Harachamim. Here it's very interesting that it says that Moshe's call, they were willing to follow B'Toiras B'Yad Moshe, B'Yad Moshe Eved Ho Elohim. So the question is why? Why, if we're already giving titles and we're calling Moshe an Eved, a servant, a loyal servant, why here are we calling him Eved Ho Elohim? And why in Parashas Zoy Sabrach we call him Eved Hashem? So I don't have a good answer, but I think the answer borders on there's Moshe the person and there's Moshe the teacher, the instructor. Here in this pasuk, we're focusing on Moshe, who's giving us instructions. Torah means instructions. He brought down to this world the luchos, the aseres adibros. He brought down tayag mitzvos. He gave us an instruction manual, mitzvos. When it comes to the mitzvos, it's Moshe is eved Elohim. There is no room to deviate. It's din. It's midas hadin. You have to stick to the rules. Don't manipulate the rules. When Hashem was being masped Moshe, Hashem was being masped him as a person, as a human being, as the teacher. Every person has many roles in life. You're a teacher, and you're also a husband, a father, a child, a person, how you relate to other people. When Hashem was being masked with Moshe, he's being masked with him as, who was Moshe? What kind of person was he? What was he? Eved Hashem, he was a servant, Yudke Vavke, he was a good person. When here we're dealing with, we have to follow the rules. We have a teacher, we have a course. The course is Judaism, the course is life. And we have a test, and we have a set of rules of how to conduct ourselves. Here are the rules. It's Moshe Eved Elohim. There's no games. There's no room to start saying, oh, today doesn't apply. Like one of my teachers in school once told us, in this place, you guys are impossible. You think, Mr. Marillus, you'll appreciate this. You think that when I give you a grade, I give a student a grade here in this place, know what a grade is? It's the opening bid in an auction. It's an opening bid. That's where we're starting. Now we can negotiate. You gave me an 80. Okay, so, and you know you have to have mercy. And I'll do a little extra credit assignment. Let's get that 80 up to a 90 to 100 to get an A. Right? An opening bid in an auction. No. Moshe, the Torah, the instruction is Torah's Elohim. There's no negotiations. There's no debate. There's no auction. These are the rules. Follow the instructions. You deviate from the instructions. F. Period. A chilek of Eved Hashem, Eved Elohim. Okay, next. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. V'asher lo nitena. Now we begin to enumerate what exactly is this covenant. We have the Allah. We have a Shavuah. What? What does it say? We're going to observe. What are we going to do? So now we begin to enumerate a long list of things which they're going to do, and each one of these items on the list is discussed at great length. Are these just to reconfirm dinim which already they were supposed to do, and they were ignorant? They do to the Galus 95 years. They had to have a refresher course on the basics. Or no, they were observant of the basics. Everything it says now, you have to read with a grain of salt. It's a rabbinic enactment. It's something brand new that's being enacted for the very first time. So what's the first thing? Yasher lo nitein b'noseinu la'am ha'aretz. Intermarriage. Right? What could be more basic than that? We're not going to give our daughters to the Am HaAretz. V'yes b'noseihem, their daughters lo nikach levonin. We're not going to take for ourselves. Now, what does that mean? So if you learn it's deraisa, okay. Deraisa, deraisa. People, and we know that from Ezra and Nehemiah, that was a major plague. That was a magefa that took place. Ezra came to Eretz Yisrael and he said, what's going on over here? There's intermarriage. And as we know we studied the psukim, there wasn't so many people. How many people were there intermarried? It was a very, very teeny percent intermarriage. But still, it required chizk. Other mefarshim tell something fascinating, that the Isser de'araisa, this is an incredible chiddush, the Isser de'araisa to marry a non-Jew, to marry, to live with them as a wife, is only the Shivas Ha'amim. Tremendous chiddush to say such a thing. The seven nations, the Canaanite nations, in Eretz Yisrael, Hachiti, Ha'amor, Ha'prizi, Ha'vus, Ha'goshi, but a Goy, a non-Jew that's not part of the Shivas Ha'amim, there's no Issur D'oraisa. It's not prohibited. It may not necessarily be such a great thing, but it's not technically forbidden. For a man to take for himself a non-Jewish woman and to live with her as a wife. Now, if a girl were to do that, if a man were to marry a non-Jewish woman, okay, there's a consequence that his children are not Jewish. Okay, so if you don't want to have Jewish children, so you won't have Jewish children. But are you doing anything that is awesome in our Torah? Let's talk about biblical law. Not different opinions. Dangerous topic. According to some, they learn from this pasuk, everything here has to be a din d'rabbanan, not a din d'oraisa. Cannot be, because if it's d'oraisa, ein mushba v'olim mehar Sinai, this whole covenant doesn't make any sense. You can't take a shvua and an oath on something which we already swore to fulfill at the time of Matan Torah. Everything here has to be understood as extending the halacha further, things which are not awesome in our Torah but in new enactments. Then they learn this as a source that when the Torah tells you that you may not take for yourself non-Jewish wives, the whole parsha, the whole in the Chumash Devarim where it talks about in the prohibition that they'll if you take for your sons non-Jewish women, they'll lead you astray to do Avodah Zarah and so on and so forth. That's only the people living in Eretz Yisrael, the Canaanite nations. But if you want to go marry someone that's not part of the Canaanite nations, it's not a good thing. You're not going to have Jewish children unless you have another wife, another Jewish wife. People have polygamy, many wives, whatever it is. But have you violated a din in the Torah, where it says in the Torah, don't take for your sons from the Elohei Hanecha? No, only from the Canaan is it also. Not here, for the very first time, Klal Yisrael are accepting upon themselves with a shvua and a curse that they will not marry a non-Jewish woman, even from the other nations besides the seven nations. Incredible chiddush. Whole way to the whole new insight into the pasuk. In Ksubis, that's what he talks about. Yeah. So it's.
If it says that, is it really Mikos is talking about in that pasuk Mitzrayim?
Yeah.
So does it really mean Mitzrayim, or is it just an overview type pasuk for everybody?
Uh-huh.
So it
gets into the issue of what is the prohibition of intermarriage.
Okay. Seven nations allowed to convert, they were asking.
That's another discussion, if they're allowed to convert. If they can convert sin, that's another issue. Let's assume...
What about bondage?
It says perish, both. It says both. Look what it says. Both. Pasuk Lamanov. First, V'yasher lo nitein b'noseinu la'me'aretz. We're not going to give our daughters la'me'aretz. V'yas b'noseihem. So I guess it's we are the people that we're just called the banim. The sons are in their own. They're in their own authority. Man, in ancient times, a man had no authority over his son when his son matured. So the pasuk really is speaking to the sons. To the sons, and telling you sons, don't take for yourselves non-Jewish, don't take for yourself a non-Jewish wife. And if you'll have a daughter, which will be under your authority, don't go give your daughter to a non-Jewish boy, to a non-Jewish man. So it, sons, we don't mention sons because it's self-understood that the men are the sons. Because the father has no shlita authority over his son. The son is an independent person. The daughter, father can do whatever he wants with his daughter. Pasuk Lamed Beis. Ve'ameh Aretz. Next thing. Now we come to one of the laws of Shabbos. Ve'ameh Aretz. And this refers to goyim. So the non-Jews, peddlers who arrive in our merchants in our town, ha-mi-vi-im es ha-ma-kavos. Ma-kavos means merchandise. They bring merchandise on Shabbos into our cities. Look at Rashi in the Mitzvot David. Es ha-ma-kavos ha-dvorim ha-nikachim mehem. Ma-kavos means mekach. The shorish of the word makochos mekach, mekach memkar, is merchandise, things in which we purchase from them, v'chol shever, food. They bring on Shabbos grain. Yes, shever b'mitzrayim. They bring grain. B'yoyim ha-shabbos limkar, lo nikach mehem b'shabbos uv'yoyim kodesh. We will not purchase from them on Shabbos and on holy days, on Yom Tif. The next thing that we're going to do, v'nitosh es hashana hashvi'is, we're going to abandon the land in the seventh year, umasoch umasho chol yod, and we're going to release our hand from collecting debts. And shmita, all debts are cancelled, unless you write a prosbul. So we accept upon ourselves that we will cancel, we will umasho means masho chol yod goes back on the word vinitosh. Nitosh means to let go. We're going to let go from masho, exercising our right to press. Masho literally means to press. When you go to your neighbor and you tell him, you know, you owe me a lot of money, you're pressing him for collection. Once Shemitah has passed, you're no longer allowed to press him for collection because the loan has been cancelled. Now, why are these dinim derabbanan? So when it comes to Shabbos, that's very simple. This is the first time. Can you imagine that until this point in time, on Shabbos, people engage in commerce? It was a very different Shabbos. If we would be taken back in history and observed and observe how they observe Shabbos, we would be shocked. Now, I don't know if maybe they were on a very high spiritual level, so we'd be shocked two ways, but there was no muksa. You're allowed to move things around. You're allowed to talk about whatever you want on Shabbos. You just can't do the Lama Tes Melachas on Shabbos. You can engage in business. You can go to a trade show. It's a whole different type of Shabbos. Now, for the first time, Nechemiah is requiring the people to take an oath and a curse that Shabbos is not just a day you can't do the Lama Tes Melachas. You have to observe Shabbos in the spirit of Shabbos. A Yom Menucha, a Yom that's holy. Wear Shabbos clothing. You go to shul. You don't do things, even though technically there's nothing technically wrong. It's still all of the takanos rabbanan are now being instituted for the very first time. Now, when it comes to Shemitah, you will ask the obvious question: is not Shemitah a din in the Torah? And on Shemitah, you're not allowed to work the land. You're going to abandon the seventh land, You're not going to work the land. As a din d'oraisa, not a din rabbanan. So the answer is no, not necessarily, for two multiple reasons. First of all, the majority of Klal Yisrael did not return to Eretz Yisrael. And that's even debatable today. Today, the majority of Jews are also still not living in Eretz Yisrael. There was a very interesting article in I Magazine of how many Jews live in Eretz Yisrael today. They have the census, are very much better than any of the claim that they have the numbers. Most countries don't really know how many people are living in their country. United States, how many people are living in the United States? No one knows. Approximately 300 million. Approximately. Probably more than that. There are probably a lot of illegal... What?
330 million.
But there are a lot of illegal immigrants...
11 million are not counted as illegal.
Or illegal aliens. Even with the numbers, there's really no way to know because we don't have in the United States a very good system. There's a census every 10 years. But it's known... It's known with accuracy that it's not accurate. There are a lot of problems, and every country suffers.
Within 20 million.
20 was a lot.
It can't be. I know. It's changing daily.
But even whatever whatever it is, unfortunately, it's not. The system is a very poor system. It's not at all precise. And every country suffers from this, not only the United States. The best, they claim, so they claim. I don't know if it's true or not, but so they claim that in Israel, they have the best. They have the most accurate record of exactly how many people are living in the country, exactly what which religion, which religion they affiliate with, which sector of the religion do you consider yourself? Do you consider a Haredi? Do you consider yourself a Mizrahi? Do you consider yourself a Dati? Where do you consider yourself? They claim that they're extremely accurate. They're very far advanced relative to the rest of the world, and they have surpassed the number 6 million. And the reason why that is such an exciting number is because of the Holocaust. The whole state of Israel was built on the foundation of the Churban of the Holocaust. I mean, that's today, unfortunately, it's not spoken about very much. But if you go back and study the history of Israel, everything about Israel in the beginning was all about Holocaust. It was a direct response to the Holocaust, including even the symbols, the Magen David and the menorah. And we're talking about, there's really no end. Unfortunately, today no one talks about this anymore, but that's the truth. And now that there are 6 million people living in the state of Israel, 6 million Jews, it's a very exciting number for people that have been around for many years, to see that number come true. In America, how many people are living in America?
Almost 6 million.
So they claim about 5.5 million. 5.5 million Jews. How many of them are Orthodox? A very small percentage. We think we run the world. Far from it. A very small percentage of the 5.5 million.
Between 15 and 20% now.
What, Orthodox?
Yeah.
Hasidim
have such a high.
In New York City.
No.
They're not 2.
Million. Well, that's the figures they give now.
What, 2 million Orthodox Jews? There are no 2 million Orthodox Jews.
No, that's what they claim.
Maybe
15%.
It can't be. Okay, I don't know. Okay, it's not. Okay, but. So 5.5, but it's very interesting that how many Jews are living now, how many Orthodox Jews are living in America? Oh, it's so later. How many Orthodox Jews are living now? How many Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael? 6 million. How many in America? 5.5. That means Israel, for the first time, has surpassed
than
America. Is there more than the whole world? No. More than the whole world? No, because there are Jews all over the world. There are Jews in other countries. America by far has the most, but there are Jews all over the world, so it's still not necessarily. And then you get into the issue of observant Jews, people who many Jews...
This group is the unaffiliated.
It's a very big problem. So in the halacha, what status do they have in halacha as far as affecting the laws of when is there a din of Shemitah min HaTorah? When does it come into effect min HaTorah when you have Jews that are not interested? They're not interested. This is a very complicated issue. And even if we would have a majority of the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael who are Shomer Torah mitzvahs, would that automatically transform the mitzvah of Shemitah into a mitzvah deraisa? What about Yovel? Do we need a Beis Hamikdash? Do we need a Sanhedrin? It's a very, very complicated halachic shilus, which there are no clear answers to. There are a lot of debates.
The Jewish population study came out 6 months ago, done, I think, by Federation.
Demographics?
Students. Yeah.
Okay, so this is... But here, one thing is clear. At this point in time of Nechem, it wasn't so complicated. It wasn't so complicated because there were possibly even millions of Jews living in Chutz Liaretz, and there was only a few thousand, 50,000 Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. So according to all opinions, not going into the sources, we have to go to the source, all the Makaris and the Rambams and Shulchan Aruch, and go back to the Gemara and the Pesukim, all the sources, the mitzvah of Shemitah is only a mitzvah derabbanan. It's not a mitzvah in that Torah. So technically, on the seventh year of the cycle, you can work the land. There's no Yovel, that's for sure. Yovel, you need a, Yovel was you need a Beis Hamikdash. Well, we have the Beis Hamikdash, but you don't have the majority of Jews living. So if there's no Yovel, the question is, if there's no Yovel, then there's no Shemitah. But there was no Yovel, and Shemitah.
There's no Beis Hamikdash?
No, there is a Beis Hamikdash. At this point in time, we have Beis Hamikdash in Nehemiah. That's another issue. It's another factor which adds into the into the calculation, because maybe you'll tell us that soon we're going to have the majority of Jews living in Eretz Yisrael, and let's assume it doesn't make a difference if they're religious, not religious. The fact that they're a Jew automatically tips the scale, but there are other issues. We don't have Beis Hamikdash. Is that a condition? Is that a condition in the mitzvahs of Shemitah and Truma and Meiser? What about Truma and Meiser? Challah. Challah, we mafresh challah even chutz liyaretz. Is it a deraisa? Is it a drabanan? It's chutz liyaretz. Even Eretz Yisrael, is it a deraisa? Truma, Meiser, these are all very big issues. So the simple understanding is it's not. It's not. There's no mitzvah deraisa. So technically speaking, the people had no obligation to work to abstain from working the land in the seventh year. And you can imagine today what a difficulty it is for farmers, someone whose entire parnassah comes from agriculture. You can imagine what it was then, when they didn't have all of these stuck organizations and the technology and other means of making a livelihood, what it meant then in those days not to work the land during the seventh year. And yet here they're taking a shavua and a curse that we're going to observe the laws of Shemitah, even though it's only it's not. There's no rabban. They're making the rabbanon for the. It's not the raisa.
Yeah,
exactly. It's right. That's this is the din rabban. They're now making it the rabban for the very first time, and also to cancel debts. There's no din. Maker a din. If a person owes you money, they owe you money. Shemitah, there is no Shemitah, so they owe you the money after Shemitah passes. It's only a din the rabbanon that you're not allowed to collect your debts. And this we're doing for the very first time. We'll just do the Rashi very quickly. We'll stop Rashi. We'll pass over the chavtes. V'chol anivdol heim hagerim shenivdol. From the laws, from the conduct of the non-Jews, there were many game which joined Klal Yisrael, especially after the miracle of Purim. This was not much longer after the miracle of Purim. They converted, and that's what we see. That theme is, appears over and over again. Pasuk Lamed Al Achayim Im Achayim with their brothers Adireim Gidolim Shebohem. The all of Klal Yisrael supported their leaders. Lamed Beis Hamikhois Haschoyos merchandise. We mekabel upon ourselves not to purchase merchandise on Shabbos. Shever, what is shever? Yes, shever b'Mitzrayim Tevua grain. K'mo b'shever Asherim Shaverim in Bereishis Tuviyam Hakodesh. Yom Tov, we have Shabbos, and we're not going to engage in business on Yom Tov. V'netoyish es Hashon HaShviyis, ki'inyin shenemar, v'hashviyis tishmeten unetashta. On the Shemitah year, you have to abandon and forsake the land. Again, we're learning according to those that learned that over here we're dealing with the Din D'Rabban, because there is no Shemitah min HaTorah. U'ma'shoh chol yad. And we will be netosh from pressing our hand by collecting our debts. Hashmotas milve b'shviyis. Okay, let's see the mitzudos pasuk of tes u'sha'or ha'am. Oh, one before is Pachas Mav Shal Moshe Moyev Pasuk of Tes Shara Masher Log Bowi Alach Asumim Chol Anivdol Elu Hagerim Kol Yed Mevin Kol Mishu Yirei Lohavin Bidav Vema Machazikim Him Kulam Hoyu Machazikim Ve'echsim Al Divrei Acheyem Ho Adirim V'Hasum Asher Bowi Alach Asum. So the Mitzvah learns Machazikim means I told you another interpretation. I saw somewhere. I don't know where I saw, but over here the Mitzvah learns it just means they were machzikim, they accepted upon themselves. The leader signed the document, and the followers
embraced it
very good. They embraced what it said in the document. Uboyim gam hemo yubam ba'ol of shuan, and all of the people, the hamoinam, they also accepted upon themselves a curse and a shua. Vashelo musav ala hu al nikra shulfan of shama ubam ba'ol of shua. What exactly was the curse in the oath? Loimar shegam hashua hoisa shaloi nosan, that they will not purchase things on Shabbos. and they will not give their children into marriage. All the things that we're going to have at the end of the parak. All the things that they will abandon the land. Nezoiv avoides hadam b'shana shmita u'masha af nazoiv b'shmita choiv ha-halva hanitan b'yad v'chei ne'amar shemot release kol baal ma'ashe yado the pressing of his hand when he comes to collect his debt. Okay, so we'll stop here with Pasuk Lamed Gimel.